Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'll bet you have an opinion about vaccines. Most people do. And what is it based on? Well, most people only have opinions about it and not based on enough information, only what we've heard from different sources that might not be even true. So let's find out more about it, because there's a wonderful new book called Inoculated, and it's amazingly comprehensive about the whole history of vaccines and also just the governmental bodies that supposedly are there to help us and might not be helping us the way we would think. And so to help us understand the whole story behind vaccines and what we can know better is the author of Inoculated, Kent Heckenlively. Kent, welcome to Energy Stew.
Hey, thanks a lot. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, this is some undertaking you have here, and it covers the whole gauntlet from the long history. And it's not really about vaccines themselves so much as the story around it and the scientists and the governmental agencies that are at war with each other and what it all means and what they're really saying and who's got honest information or not. And you go into the great detail of all the research and the powers that be on both sides of the issue and how they've worked for their own ends. And it's quite a tome of work that you've created. It's a very comprehensive book, and I want to thank you for your courage to write this book, because so many people who you talk about in this book have been treated very badly, extremely badly sometimes, and you're brave enough to really attack this subject matter.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, the place I always like to start, especially with the general public, is going back to 1986, because in 1986, a law was passed called the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, and this dramatically changed the relationship between consumers and manufacturers and injured children, basically. And so what it did was it created something called a vaccine court. Now, this is a very different court than people are used to, because let's say your listeners are, making toast this morning. Well, let's say your toaster catches fire and burns down your kitchen. You understand that you can sue the manufacturer. You can get them to divulge all the complaints they've gotten about toasters catching fire. You can interview the engineers who designed it. Nothing even remotely similar to that exists regarding vaccines. So you have to go to this special court. And what was really interesting in my research was to go back and find out that when President Reagan signed this law, he actually, in his signing statement, had said that he believed that he was signing the bill with serious reservations about its constitutionality. And he hoped that Congress would change the law in the next session, which they never did. And then I went even further, because I thought, okay, well, it's one thing for me to go back and look at the history of when it was signed and what people were saying at the signing of it. But I thought, you know, let's do a thorough job here. So I interviewed one of the senior judges on the vaccine court, and come to find that he doesn't think the thing has been working for, 25 years. Then I also went and I interviewed a Stanford law professor who had studied who's one of the few academics who'd actually studied the court. And her conclusion was that the court was not working the way it was intended. And with both these people, it was really interesting, because I methodically went through, okay, this court was designed to speed recovery to parents, and parents if they suspected a vaccine injury, were supposed to be paid a decision in no less than 6 months, and it's usually 5 years, and it's very acrimonious, and it's just working terribly. And so, you know, the whole thrust of my book really is to take a look, first of all, at this vaccine court, then to show how it hasn't worked, and it set up this terrible, you know, unjust system in which awful things can happen. And really, the book, looking at some whistleblowers who've come out from the vaccine program, but also taking a broader look at it and saying, you know, this law needs to be abolished and vaccines need to be put back in our regular civil court systems. And if we did that, then I think we would start getting some of the answers that parents have been after for decades.
And yet you go through so much of the research and show that the answers are there.
Yeah.
It's just that they're being suppressed.
Yeah, so the book really opens with the story of a CDC whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson, who is a senior scientist in the Immunization Safety Division. And what happened is that starting in November of 2013, he started contacting another scientist and autism parent, somebody who had been one of the leaders in our community, Dr. Brian Hooker, who's a college biology professor at Simpson University in Northern California. And what Thompson revealed to Hooker is that the CDC had conducted research on the effects specifically of the MMR vaccine, that's the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and found that there was a link between earlier administration of the vaccine and autism. Specifically in African American males, there is about a 3.5-fold increase, and there is also about a 2.5-fold increase in a group they called isolated autism, which simply means a normally developing child. And so for activists like me who've been in the fight for about 15 years, we've always wondered, is the CDC just actively avoiding asking the question, or do they really know what has happened? And what was really dramatic is that Thompson turned over about 10,000 documents to Congress, specifically the office of Congressman William Posey out of Florida, and sought and has been granted whistleblower protection, so he's waiting to be subpoenaed. And I applied to the office of Congressman Posey for access to the documents, and he granted them. So, you know, I base my book mainly on documents that I've received from Congress. So for those who think that, you know, people like me are out there, all I can say is I feel like I'm doing the job that a decent investigative reporter would have done 15 or 20 years ago, you know, getting documents from reliable sources and then writing about them.
Right, and you're an attorney, and so you're very clear in procedure to get to the truth.
Yeah, I think I'm really kind of uniquely situated to do this because for 15 years I worked as an attorney. In the past 10 years I've been a science teacher. So I think I've always felt a bit like a weird duck. But I think I'm perfectly designed to take on a task like this.
Well, it's the reason it's such a difficult task is the powers that be are pretty violent against people who speak out. And it takes powerful people to speak out. And one of the speakers, there are some people out there who are starting to voice their opinions that are hard to repress. And one of them is Robert De Niro. Another, of course, is Robert Kennedy Jr. And you know, these are powerful people in the world who aren't taken lightly.
And one of the people that it seems like we have on our side is now the new president-elect of our country.
Right.
I was really, you know, our movement is not political. We have people, you know, autism doesn't have a political party. I tread very lightly because I know people get, you know, emotional about these things. But I was really happy as I was finishing up this book to start getting stories that Trump had met with specifically Dr. Andy Wakefield, the British researcher who had first noticed a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. And so, I had interviewed Andy for the book, so it was an easy thing to call him up and say, Andy, I'm hearing these rumors. Are they true? And he says, yes, they are. And I said, okay. Okay, time for another interview. So, on August 11th, 2016, Trump met with Dr. Andy Wakefield, a guy named Dr. Gary Kompothrakis, who's out of Florida, and a group of other autism advocates, including some of my people from Age of Autism.
And Trump has his own personal experience with autism.
And they met for about 50 minutes, and this story of the whistleblower has been made into a film called Vax, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe. They went through that. They gave him a copy of the documentary. He promised to watch it, and he said that if he won, there would be further meetings to the White House. And so
that's wonderful.
We're going to hold him to it. We've been, thrown overboard by politicians before. Obama in 2008 promised us an autism czar. Well, he's got about 23 days left and still no autism czar. So, it's exciting, but, we'll keep going. So
yeah.
I really think that we're in a place because Trump also seems to have personal experience with this that he's talked
exactly.
about. So.
Right. Yeah, and that's the point. And so only a president can really fight the powers that be, because I recently went to a talk that Bobby Kennedy Jr. gave mm-hmm. about thimerosal. I mean, he's really such an active speaker against mercury poisoning. And started a World Mercury Project
right.
to eliminate it, and it's amazing. The biggest thing I came away from his talk, other than that, I already knew a lot of the facts about mercury and its effects, is that his trouble with being with getting publicity around his project. That all the powers that be out there in the media, all the media giants, are rejecting any stories about vaccines and mercury, even though they accept everything else he writes about, all the issues that Kennedy thinks are important, the press is willing to take on, except vaccines. They won't talk about them at all because they're all so beholden to pharmaceutical advertising all over the media, even including Huffington Post and all these places, won't touch it. And so that's why it really takes a president to make a difference here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I'm hopeful that he is going to be a man of his word, that he's going to talk about this. It's really been interesting because I think at the beginning of all of this going on, he was asked specifically about autism vaccines, and to his credit, he did not back down. And it's like I almost have an image of all of these people there going like, oh my God, we can't get him to shut up about this. What's our course of action? And I think that their course of action has been, they thought he was going to lose, so they just, avoided it. But I'm, what do you do? It's like that old song, what do you do about a problem? Like Maria, but what do you do about a problem like Trump? He's not going to stay quiet about this. So,
Right. And he was a candidate who I didn't personally want in office for many reasons, although none of the other candidates were speaking out or having any interest in the whole vaccine industry, or even they were supporting it, and so there was a part of me that really wanted Trump to win for that reason alone, is that he might be the one who protects all these children out there who are being harmed.
Yeah, and it's like I feel like I was telling all my Democratic friends, saying like, okay, look, I'm sorry. I'm going to ask for your vote. I'll vote Democratic the next four elections. Okay. We need this one to be made.
Right. Exactly. And let's hope that there's more good that can come out of Trump other than just vaccines, but to interfere, for him to interfere with the CDC, primarily the CDC, and also so many other government organizations, it's amazing the corruption that, and certainly Bobby Kennedy is one of the best speakers about the insiders at these government organizations who are all industry people. Mm-hmm. And, with the FDA, Department of Agriculture, CDC, the NIH, all over the place. It's loaded with people who are there to protect the pharmaceutical and agricultural companies and not protect the public.
Yeah, and so what was really interesting in putting together this book is to look at the documents and see how these scientists at the CDC, what was really interesting was to realize as you're going through these documents and looking at this cover up and looking how they conceal this information is, I'm an attorney and I'm a science teacher, so I know what a research plan should look like, and I know how people should behave honestly and ethically. And when they set up their research plan, they really didn't think they were going to find anything, because their research plan was pretty solid. And so, the corruption is just overwhelming, because it's not just that they had a poorly designed study. They had a good, well-designed study. But the problem was that when they got the information that they didn't want, they changed it. And, I'm one of these people who, when I was, 5 years old, I wanted to be a scientist. And I think, like a lot of people who are drawn to science, what I love is that science has a sacred obligation to tell the truth without fear or favor. I mean, that's, we think of science as fearless. And to see how fearful these scientists have been, I mean, they have betrayed science. I mean, they've made an immoral decision. What they have participated in has been an absolute crime against humanity. And I wish I could use less inflammatory words to describe it, but I really can't. When you think that if they had come out with this information in 2002, 2003, we would not have a million more children diagnosed with autism. And I just think that is it's a crime against humanity, and it should be treated as such.
Well, let's go back to the 1990s when Congress really thought they could start working towards truth.
Mm-hmm.
and started, making plans to understand the science of all of this, and how it looked like it was moving in the right direction until that, vaccine court got going, and then all of a sudden it was being distorted. And so there is a lot of science that was appreciated in the past and all of a sudden became verboten in recent times. And so it's really not about the science. The science is there. Certainly there are a lot of research projects that you talk about in the book at length that have come out to state that there is no problem with vaccines, but you show all the holes in those research projects, all the bias and prejudice that were behind them that show that they don't have any validity.
Well, here's something really simple for your listeners to get. So, look, I'm a middle school science teacher, okay? I've been teaching science for 10 years now, okay? So when I have my students do an experiment, they have to show me their data. And I say, you can't change your data. Whatever you get, good or ill, you got to report it. And so that's a real simple idea for people to get. So the government has done two major studies on vaccines and autism. First one was looking at mercury and autism, and that resulted in the Simpson-Wood Conference. And then they've looked at the MMR vaccine and autism. So in both those instances, their initial reporting was that there was a link, and then both groups said they, quote, lost the raw data. And so, you know, I wouldn't let my middle school science students get away with saying they lost the data. And, you know, these are top scientists at our leading institutions. They're telling us to believe them that they inadvertently lost the data, but then they come back and tell us that vaccines are safe. So,
yeah, because they kind of remember the data and then distort what it might have said, but nobody can prove what it really said.
Yeah.
So, you know, but there are also studies out of Denmark that you talk about that were done by people in the industry, you know, supposedly reporting on themselves and,
yeah,
and
so,
using,
you know,
biased reporting.
Yeah, so here you have this whistleblower who has saved all these documents, so they can't say that this information is destroyed, and everybody just acts like, you know, he didn't really say anything. And, you know, the lawyer in me just, you know, screams at the injustice of that.
Right. And, you know, and I've seen that happen with other scientists in other situations with the government where data was supposedly lost and then opinions were made.
Yeah,
against
that's
good science.
What I think is really important about my book is I take a methodical look at it, and I always jokingly laugh because my wife says, you know, you're so smart and you get into all this stuff, but finally, Kent, you've written a book that's really readable, and I can read it quickly. I don't feel like I need a PhD to read your books now. So I put that out there for your listeners that you know, even though this is a complex subject, I think I've done a really good job at putting together a really fast-paced narrative, and you know, it's got about 500 footnotes in it. So if you really want to dig into it, you know, go look at all the documents I cite, which are mostly online now.
Uh huh. And you really get into so many of the stories of the different people, and talking about things like retroviruses. And, you know, these are deep understandings of why vaccines don't work and how destructive they can be by either transmitting retroviruses or being given to children who have inherited retroviruses, and those are lying in wait to be disturbed by vaccines.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about children's lives, and we're talking about families' lives. And so I think it's just really important that we ask all these questions and, you know, we be relentless in trying to help people who suffer from disease. I mean, you know, I think that's, you know, when I titled my book, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism, that's really the thing I'm talking about, is science is supposed to be about relentlessly searching for the truth to improve people's lives. And what's happened is, you know, the truth-seeking mission of science has been compromised, and they're telling people not to do this kind of research because it will reveal unfortunate things. Well, that's not what science is about. Science is not about, you know, keeping secrets. Science is about finding answers, and then making people's lives better.
Yeah, sure. And you know, I think a lot of people are just in denial that our government can't be so bad. They want to believe in what's out there, and you know, and then there's this whole idea of conspiracy theories, and also there is so much press about people like you who don't know what you're talking about. You know, they make it sound like you and Wakefield and so many other and Mikovits and you're all deranged or something. And you know, and wait, you know, it's amazing how the press can be so alienating.
It is, and you know, one of the things that I say is this really is an unprecedented story. And so I try to have some sort of sympathy for those people out there who think I am crazy, you know. I just say to them, okay, you know, I understand you think I'm crazy. This really is an unprecedented story. I mean, when in history have we had something so evil as a program that's supposed to be helping children actually be hurting them? I understand that. So I don't, you know, get too worked up about the fact that people think I'm crazy. You know, all I say to them is, okay, you know, look, I'm trained as an attorney, so you understand the concept of the innocent man unjustly accused, and, you know, you have no problem with stories about, you know, that trial that takes place 20 years later where they seek to, you know, show that this man was wrongly convicted of murder. So just think of my book Inoculated as that case. So if you don't think if you think I'm crazy, that's fine. But what I ask of you is pick up my book, read it, you know, check out all my references and see, you know, if you can poke any holes in what I'm saying.
Right. And you do a very good job. And we're getting near the end of the show. And so this is a book that so many people should have, because you never know when autism will show up and where, and people among people you know, friends and family, and you want to help them. And it's so, and it's just valuable as citizens to want to do right in the world.
And the thing I want to leave your audience with is, I know that there's a lot of darkness in this story, but I think we need to get to the dark, go through the darkness before we get to the hope. Because in one of the chapters near the end, I talk about scientists who are looking for the real problems of autism. I think we're really close. I think if this story gets out there, we can be looking at, in a year to 3 years, actually having effective treatments and, if not outright, cures for autism. So we need to go through the darkness.
And there is an organization that was at the Kennedy talk. I can't find their paper right now, but it's something about hope, and they actually have treatments for autistic children, and they're helping a lot of children.
We need to get the government on our side to help us, because if the government fights us on this, you know, it may be another 5 to 10 years before we can really bring hope to kids.
Right. So let's keep going at it. So Kent Heckenlively, the author of Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism, I want to thank you so much for being on Energy Stew. This is so helpful.
Okay, thanks so much.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you. And thank you so much for listening.